Hello and welcome to Philosophy with Will Anderson. I'm Will Anderson from the title of the podcast. Guyton Grantley is today's guest. We actually recorded this interview over 6 months ago. This is a historical one, one from the vaults that slipped through the cracks for no particular reason, because I love Guyton and I like this episode. And I think mostly because of what we were talking about, which is Harry Potter and the Cursed Child, the play that he is in, the Harry Potter play that he is in Melbourne is, you know, pretty much sold out for about 5 years. So there wasn't the urgent rush of some of the other guests to plug their project. But I'm glad that I'm finally getting to bring this one to you. It has previously been referenced on other podcasts, but haven't got to hear it until today. So I hope you enjoy this chat from the vaults with Guyton Grantley. Awesome dude. And if you get a chance, if you're a Harry Potter fan, go and check out Harry Potter and the Cursed Child. Even if you're not a Harry Potter fan, I had never read any of the books. I'd barely seen any of the movies, and I went and saw it, and I thought it was absolutely magnificent. So we talk a little bit about that in this podcast, but I can't really remember what else we talked about because it was so long ago. Hey, I've got some shows. If you want to come and see me do some shows, Brunswick Heads, less than 2 weeks away, I'll be doing my Will Inform show at the Brunswick Picture House. So if you're on the north coast of New South Wales, or if you're on the Goldie, I'm not coming to the Goldie. So if you're from the Goldie and you want to come and see me, maybe Brunswick Heads is the place to come and see the show. I will be doing a week of shows at the beautiful Brunswick Picture House. And then Adelaide Fringe Festival. I took last year off Adelaide Fringe, so I'm back. Will Informed also at the Adelaide Fringe in a smaller venue this year, because we decided a little bit late that that we were going to go to Adelaide, and the submissions were already in. So I would say that it'll probably all sell out. So if you want to come and see me do the show in Adelaide, don't be Adelaide about it, because Adelaide are traditionally people who book late. I would say book early, or you might have it, particularly for the weekends and stuff, or you may miss out on coming to see the show. I reckon it's going to be an absolute cracker, because it's the show that I debuted at Melbourne last year, but obviously, you know, I'm sort of rewriting it and rethinking it a year down the track. So I think it's going to be a really cool thing to do, to be honest. So come out and see me in Adelaide. 2 weeks in Adelaide at the Adelaide Fringe. After that, the Melbourne Comedy Festival, I am going to be doing 2 weeks of Will Legal, my show about being arrested, and then 2 weeks of my completely improvised stand-up show, What You Talking About, Will. Just did 10 shows of that at the Sydney Comedy Store. Had a ball. Even more fun than I could have imagined. Not having the pressure to develop material, just being able to consider every show as an individual piece, as an individual show, was one of the most fun experiences, actually, I've ever had doing stand-up. I loved it. And to be honest, I'd probably do 5 of them a week for the rest of my life if people would come and see them. But instead, I'm going to do 10 in Melbourne. 2 weeks, 10 shows, completely made up on the spot. If you've ever seen any of my written shows, you might have seen me do a little bit of crowd work at the start. It's just like that, but for the whole show. We weave together stories. We get to meet people. Each of them has their own feel and flavor. It's a really good time. So come out and see that. Buy some tickets to come along and see What You're Talking About, Will. There'll be other shows. In fact, there are other shows that are already on sale around the country. So comedy.com.au if you want to check out the details. But they are the main headline ones. Brunswick Heads and Adelaide. You guys are coming up soon. So start getting on board and getting your tickets if you want to come and see the shows. If you cannot come and see me do a show, but you still want to support the podcast, patreon.com/willosophy is the place to go. And this year, we are going to try to do some more stuff on the Patreon page, but as of yet, we haven't got around to working out exactly what that might be, but we want to offer some extra value there for the people who support the show. All right, that's enough for now. Enjoy this episode with Guyton Grantley. Hello and welcome to Philosophy with Will Anderson. I am Will Anderson from the title of the podcast, and joining me today, well, this is how the podcast starts. This guest doesn't really know what they're in for, and I always like that. I always like when I say to somebody beforehand, do you know what you've signed yourself up for? And they're like, no, not really. Anyway, basically, this is how the podcast starts. I ask you who you are. So who are you?
My name is Guyton James Grantley.
Oh, James.
Oh, yes, yes. Guyton. My father named me and my brother and I, in case we would be knighted. So I would be Sir Guyton James Grantley, and my brother would be, who's Billy, would be Sir William Leonard Grantley. But you can't get knighted anymore. You just get an Order of Australia.
Well, I mean, you could. You have to do something in the UK and get sort of an honorary knighthood from the Queen, don't you?
As an Australian, though.
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Right.
No, I don't really care. It's yeah. So anyway.
No, I understand.
Hi everyone.
That.
My name's Guyton, and I'm here.
Well, it's good to have you here, Guyton. I appreciate that. But William and James, very traditional names, and I know that because my name is William James Anderson, so named after my two grandfathers.
James is the best middle name.
It's a real middle name filler, James.
Yeah. Well, you can go the J, like Michael J. Fox, or you know, I can't think of any at the moment. But it's a good one of those. Just add the J if you want to like.
When I was
jazz up your name,
there was a lot of
William J. Grantley,
William James at my primary school and kindergarten, and one of them got Billy Jack, which I never had heard before. But apparently, you can get Billy Jack from William James.
Was he like from the southern states of America?
No, this
Billy
was like
Jack?
We're talking about Hayfield,
okay.
You know, population of 1,200 people, country Victoria. It was couldn't be further away from from America. Now, can we just talk about the name? Because you said your dad named you to be knighted, but Guyton is it's a pretty distinctive name, isn't it? Like how is it growing up with a distinctive name? Because you're from Brisbane, right?
I'm from Brisbane. Yes.
Now, was Guyton wouldn't have been a particularly popular name in Brisbane.
I'm the only one, that I know of. It's a surname. It's my great grandmother's maiden name.
Oh, okay.
And we think it's got French heritage, so it's like Giton or Guiton.
Oh.
But actually, funnily enough, I moved here to Melbourne about 7 years ago to do a TV show called House Husbands. And about 3 or 4 years ago, I was driving through a suburb called Paran, and there's this old pub with sandstone facade, and it had R.J.Guyton. Established 1863 on the top of the facade.
Right.
And I was like, WTF. And so I took a photo and sent it to Dad, and he sent it to his sister. And turns out she received this journal recently from Robert James Guyton. And so this bloke came over in the early 1800s, well, mid-1800s, to go to Ballarat to look for the gold. And apparently he did really well. In the first week, found an ounce or something of gold, came back and it doesn't matter, this is not important, but then went back and built a brick factory in Ballarat, did really well with that,
right.
And then came back and built the pub in
Now, just a technical question. When you're building a brick factory, what do you build that out of? Do you have to go to another...
Mud brick.
I was going to say, you have to go to another brick factory.
That's brilliant.
It's like, we've got a real problem here, guys. We'd love to build a factory.
The chicken or the egg. Yeah. I'm going to make a lumber factory, yeah.
So Brisbane. What was the family doing up in Brisbane?
Dad was born there, and Mum was born there. But Mum's family's from Tassie, and Dad's family extended older family is from Melbourne.
Okay.
So my roots are in Melbourne.
But Dad was from Brisbane.
The name Guyton is that's where that is or originates from. I've always considered myself from Brisbane, Queensland.
Okay. And so what did the parents do when you were growing up? What were they?
Dad's in advertising.
Yeah.
Well, Dad did all sorts of things. Dad was a rock and roll star to begin with.
That right? Like an actual rock and roll star?
Yeah, like toured the States and like they were the biggest kind of local band in Brisbane. So they opened for many big names like Ray Charles and Stevie Wonder and Billy Joel. And Dad had a TV show, kind of the first kind of music kind of rage kind of countdown show called Seven Goes Pop.
Right.
And then he got into radio. He was at 4BK, which is now B105. And then after that, he got into advertising.
Right. So there was a bit of show business in the family already.
I guess it absolutely. Yeah.
Did you always want to be an actor?
Yeah, I guess so. Well, I knew I was always really enjoyed it and I really, really loved it and was aware that I had talent in that area, but was also aware that, as my mum would always say, 0.05% of the acting population ever make a living. So when I finished school, I just did an arts degree for a year, just did all sorts of subjects, you know, business.
You were like, this will make me more employable. Yeah. I'll do an arts degree.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I remember then when I finally started... my acting degree, I'll never forget this, in the toilets. I looked over at the toilet paper, and above the toilet paper, it said arts degree dispenser. Yep. Someone had graffitied that there. I was like, ah, right on. But I wasn't there to get the degree. I was there to learn the skills of acting. And yeah, so hang on. Was that the answer to the question?
It doesn't matter. We've got time. We'll meander through some stuff. But I'm really interested in when you first acted. Do you remember the first thing that you ever did that you would consider acting?
I guess maybe grade one.
Oh, okay. So early.
Yeah. A friend had come for a sleepover, and we were just doodling, and we were made some like puppets. We drew some animals and two pieces of paper, and then, you know, staple them together and you stuff them with other pieces of paper.
So yeah.
You know, 3D a bit. And then sticky taped rulers to those puppets. And I remember doing a puppet play behind the blackboard, you know, the little blackboard on wheels. And doing a little show for my classmates. And I do remember that they just really loved it. And I remember, like, enjoying that they enjoyed my storytelling for them. And, you know, obviously after that, everyone else was doing puppet plays. So, you know, I just thought, hey, I just remember that being a bit of a seed being planted of like, oh, hey, entertaining. It's cool. I like that. Telling stories. Yeah, that's good.
And at high school, was there like, you know, high school musicals or theatre productions and things like that that you got involved in?
Yeah, yeah. So then I did a Stedfords and...
Oh, so the rocker Stedford?
No. Just a speech and drama Stedfords.
Oh, okay.
So reciting poetry and prose.
Okay. I had a vision of you doing an environmental dance to, you know, Kisses, I Was Made for Loving You, Baby or something.
I'm not tone deaf, but I can't hit notes. It's tough.
Okay.
My 2-year-old son's catching me on it already as well. I can learn a song, you know, I've been in a musical, but anyway, I digress. So yeah, a little bit of that, but yeah, then school plays, which were great.
Okay. So when you decide that you want to be an actor, can you remember, like, cause I'm often interested in, did you know before you told people? Like, was there a sense in your mind of going, I want to do this, I want to be an actor, before you then said to the world, I want to be an actor? Or
When I was at school. Yeah, doing theatre sports, especially at school, was really, you know, invigorating and enlightening and exciting and just awesome fun. Just that moment of life, being in the moment. Which is what I love about theatre sports. I really want to get back into it, actually. We'll just watch it and we'll learn more about it. You know, whose line is it anyway? That kind of stuff. It's just so in the moment. I just love that. But yeah, I remember doing that at high school. Josh Lawson actually was in a competing team from the other school and we beat him. Yeah, take that, Josh.
you know what the great thing is? He'll be mad that that's come up. He'll be mad that that's on the public record now.
He's over there in LA on his hit TV show. He's like, damn it, Cotton.
He'll be getting a Google alert right now and he'll be mad. He's like, everything's been going very well for me, Cotton. And I don't want this.
When my team Stage Fright beat Josh's team, the Oxymorons. In 1996, at the Blatt Theatre in Brisbane, it was a big day for me.
So hang on, Stage Fright and Oxymorons.
Yeah, and I think Ben Lawson was in the team as well, his brother.
My high school theatre sports team was called Over the Top.
Oh, nice.
We had a chant that we introduced ourselves with, which was, to see if I can remember it off the top of my head. It was like one of those ones where we would almost say a rude word, but not say a rude word. You know, that classic sort of, you know, over the top. We're a team of class. All you others watch out. We're going to kick ask us any questions. One of those ones.
That's that when every time the wheel went round, it hit.
Yeah. So high school theatre sports. I like the idea of what you're saying about the excitement of creation, because I often think about, particularly as a stand-up, I think about the idea that eventually creation becomes recreation, right? So like sometimes, you know, when you're performing, when you're in that theatre sports moment, you're literally in the act of creating a moment. Mm. You know, I'm improvising, I'm here with the crowd, I'm here with these other performers, and we are making something together that has never been made before and won't be replicated again. Whereas, you know, when you're doing something like you're doing at the moment, where you're doing the Harry Potter, you know, play, you're essentially you're recreating every night the same thing over and over again.
Absolutely.
Tell me about those two different states and what it's like to do each of those things.
Yeah, well, I guess it can become quite terrifying, and it was, the idea, the prospect of doing that, the scripted play, Harry Potter, every night for a year. And, you know, there's just the common idea of you need to find something new. And you can do that, but you start to run out of kind of options and avenues and corners and nooks and crannies to go to. But you can, you really can. And it's amazing, just the tiniest little little things that you can find in every word. So it, and that's what I found, I've found fascinating about finding the freshness, trying to find freshness every night on something that you're repeating, is how much you can be astounded by what how many layers can be within a simple sentence, in terms of intention or history or what, or just like raw emotion from, you know, that's inspired in that moment, or or even accent, or just whether you're hungry or not.
Right.
it can really affect every way you be. And so it's important to do that. Otherwise, you know, and I'll admit this, there were moments earlier on where you start to wander, and I would start doing my grocery list in my head while on stage. And then there was all of a sudden a silence, and I'm like, why is it so cool? Oh, it's my line. And so you need to stay in the moment. You need to be listening. And and so once you start actively doing that, it opens up this whole world of possibility and excitement. And that's mostly important for the audience because it's alive.
The play's called Harry Potter and the Cursed Child. And I wanted to talk to you on the podcast. And when we were asking if we could talk to you on the podcast, they actually said, we'd love if you would come and see the play first. And I, to be honest, up until that point, because I'm not a Harry Potter fan, you know, it wasn't my generation. I never really got into it. I reckon I've seen a movie and a half, and I reckon that's probably out of four of the movies. Like, yeah. I'd, you know, watch about an hour and a half. I've got the gist.
Yeah.
I knew that Harry was a boy wizard, and I knew that there was like Ron and Hermione.
He's a bad guy.
Yeah, I knew there was Voldemort. I'm not really sure which one was which. There was houses. I knew about Quidditch.
Houses? Man, you're well into it.
Yeah, I knew there was, like, you know, you ran into a wall or something. There was a magical train. Like,
I've seen all the memes of people running into
exactly.
it in real
like,
life.
Yeah. It's hard not to have the gist.
Yeah.
Right, you know? But I wasn't necessarily across the details of the story. And I thought, you know what? It's in two parts, you know, and it's 2.5 hours each part.
Yeah, it's two plays.
Mm. Two plays. And so I was like, you know what? I'll go to the first half, you know, and I'll watch that. And, you know, to be honest, if I've got the gist and I don't feel like I'm loving it, I'll be like, well, that's fine.
Yeah, that's good.
That'll be good. I know what I'm talking about, guys. Right?
Yeah.
I did them both in the same day. I was absolutely blown away by it. I just thought it was genuinely, you know, as you've said, magical. It the way that they've transformed the Princess Theatre, like, into, you know, just being able to wander around the theatre itself and see what they've done.
Millions of dollars just on the interior
it's
and the exterior.
Absolutely stunning. I don't know where the Harry Potter franchise found that money. I hear they're doing very badly.
Yeah.
It's been very hard for them.
It's fully art, yeah.
Were you a Harry Potter fan before you decided?
Oh, reasonably.
Yeah, okay.
I'd read some of the books and seen some of the movies. I kind of just, I don't want to say grew out of it, but just my interests went elsewhere. Because I was in my early 20s when it arrived, so it was fun. Now, since, obviously, I've read everything and watched everything, and there's this great website called Pottermore, which JK writes for. It's her website. It's more Potter, basically, just more Potter stuff.
Right.
And so she'll write extra articles and things and little, it's just an incredible world. And it really is, when you throw yourself deep into it, just spellbinding and magical and wonderful and just a great way to explore it. Funnily enough, like, the human condition in the wizarding, through the wizarding world. You know, it's,
well, this play in particular, and it got me, I think this got me more interested in the story than even what my knowledge of the story up until this point is, because and I don't think this is giving too much away. This is the premise of the play, which is that, you know, Harry and his friends have all grown up and mm-hmm. then suddenly they have children of their own.
Yep.
And that, you know, this kid who is this sort of idealized, you know, boy hero mm-hmm. is now an adult struggling with all yeah. the sort of issues
the real human ideas. So, you know, what would Harry Potter be like as a dad? And, you know, and it looks at love, it looks at friendship, it looks at the excitement of adventure and the challenges that you meet along the way.
So all that stuff to me was absolutely fascinating. I thought it was just like an incredible thing to watch. But one of the things that really struck me, and I've been thinking about it so much since, is that some of it's genuinely scary.
Oh, yeah.
Now, around me, and again, I won't give away why this is, but at the end of the first play, there's quite a terrifying finale, right? And around me, as we were leaving the theater, there were children crying, like terrified crying, like in a good terrified
in a good way.
Way.
Oh dear.
Well,
yeah.
But no, but in a, you know, their first, you know, we all kind of remember that first time you went to a movie or stayed up too late with yeah. your parents to watch something. And there was an image in it that just scared you for a while. And I think that is actually very important in life to not be protected from scary
yeah,
things.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Their parents are there. They know it's theatre.
Yeah,
they,
no, they there's do. No 8-year-old kids who've gone to see that by themselves.
No.
Some kid's just saved up $600 by himself and just gone, I'm going to run away from home and go and see the Harry Potter
play.
Well,
there's some kids that manage to go on holidays overseas with their parents' credit cards before they know. But yeah, absolutely. It is. There are moments that are absolutely terrifying, which is one of the great things about the whole world is that JK doesn't hold back. It gets so dark in the books towards the end. The last three or four books are really dark, very horror, you know, deep themes. And you know, the world isn't fair. And I think it's important for kids to learn that is, you know, it's like we should definitely aim to be, to live by the rules and be honest and good to each other. But ultimately, you're going to come across evil and deception, and that exists in this show very much so. And it's a great lesson to, you know, tackle and learn and discover how other people and watch how other characters deal with that.
It was the thing that I took away the most that impressed me was that it didn't shy away from, you know, delivering some real darkness.
Yeah, as people say, it's not, it's a musical. It's not a musical.
No.
It is a piece of theatre, and it's... And that's also the great thing about theatre. I mean, this might be something we want to talk about later, but it's the beauty of this, more so than a book, more so than a film, is that the beauty of theatre is that it's live. The audience are there in the room with the actors who are telling this story. So every time we speak, the audience reacts, whether it's a gasp or a laugh or silence, dead silence. And the actors feed off that. And the audience, it's a to and fro kind of relationship. And anything that happens, like this particular event that you speak of, that happens. It's shared by everybody. It's and that's the most beautiful thing about it. It's alive. It's living in its own kind of independent truth in that moment every night. If that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It makes sense. Are you amazed at? Because I'd be very interested. Because as a stand-up. You know, you were very aware that from night to night, you know, a reaction to a joke or a reaction to a moment might be very different mm-hmm. with the audience. In something like this, what you'd imagine if you're not thinking about it at all is that the audience reaction is the same every night. You know, you get 3,000 people in a room. Yeah, this is the bit they're meant to laugh at. This is the bit they're meant to be shocked at.
Mm.
Tell me what the truth is. Is that the case? Is it pretty, you know, I know this will get a big laugh. I know this will get a shock. Or is there nights where you're just like, oh, that got a different reaction tonight than what it got last night?
Absolutely. It is different every night. And it's and for that very reason. You have a different combination of demographic. You know, Wednesdays can be, generally the Wednesday matinee is known as to be the blue rinse kind of crowd.
Yeah.
But it's a bit different with this one because it's a double show. But we noticed during the school holidays, there were obviously a lot more children in the audience, and that really changed the reactions. And There's generally always a laugh where you expect there to be a laugh, but the size and magnitude of that, or the timing of the reactions are always different, which feeds you. And yeah, as I said before, it's the same idea. It just keeps it unique. It keeps it individual to that moment. Every performance is its own thing.
How do you enjoy? Because I mean, I'm someone who understands. You know, like I'm a laugh junkie, you know, like, you know, all I want to do is make people laugh. Mm. Whereas you're an actor who's got a wide range and have played a whole bunch of serious characters. And, you know, like a lot of your work has been obviously on film for television, these sort of things, where that you don't have that live interaction with the audience, but you have so many good, funny lines in this, you know, in this
Ron's
show.
Very lucky in that respect.
And yeah. Also your performance is hilarious.
Thank you.
Is it fun? You know, are you having just fun feeding off the idea that, you know, you get to go out
well,
there?
It's one of the reasons why I was keen to take the job, because if it was, you know, gut-wrenching, sobbing, crying every night, you know, stabbing yourself in the heart every night, I don't think I could do it for a year, because I want to go there truthfully every night, and there are still some very deep moments that Ron visits in this show, but he gets to go on and that's kind of Ron's, you know, philosophy on life is just, hey, like you've got to laugh, you know, we can't always be, they're also, maudlin. I'd say most of the characters they're also maudlin. They just want to just worry and ponder about the darkness that's out there. And Ron's like, hey, have we forgot about having a laugh? You know, yeah. Let's have a joke. Let's light, you know, if he had a theme song, it would be the Monty Python's Always Look on the Bright Side of Life. It's just the way I kind of see him. So, yeah, I don't know. So I guess in terms of like getting those laughs, or achieving those laughs, it's something that I did kind of try to experiment with for the first few weeks or few months was like the timing or, you know, do I wait another half a beat here and then hit that line? And you really could, you discover you can actually play the audience a bit like a fiddle or whatever you'd like to use. But then I discovered, even more so, the more that I ignored that and went back to just being in the moment of the actual production, of the actual story, being Ron and listening to Hermione and being in the scene and actually reacting genuinely more so as you would naturally, that's when you got the biggest laughs, or the biggest reactions. It's funny like that. There's some physical gags and things that really work well if you time them just right. But yeah, in terms of lines and that, because acting is ultimately reacting. You know, you've got to just listen. If you're listening to someone say something, then you react to that. People ask you how you learn your lines. It's like, well, you got to learn everyone's lines. Someone says, hey, what, you know, where shall we go next? And then that inspires your answer. And that's how you remember your lines. So the best way to learn your lines and be in the moment is to listen and react. So, yeah.
I wasn't really listening to your answer there, no. But I assume it was great.
I did wander on.
Yeah. Absolutely. And you can tell that. And I think that even if an audience doesn't understand that they're doing it, I think an audience can understand when an actor thinks the funny bit's coming up. You know, when they're anticipating it, the audience can feel it, even if they can't process it in their mind that that's what they're feeling. And the more that the line comes out naturally, the more the audience has an opportunity to go, no, we're making our own choice to laugh here. Yeah. Even if 3,000 people are suddenly laughing together, they all feel like they individually made their own choice to laugh in that moment.
It's funny because it's true.
How many nights a week do you do? How many shows a week are you doing?
We do 8 shows a week. Wednesday to Sunday. So you do the double on Wednesday. You do part one Thursday night, part two Friday night, and double on Saturday, double on Sunday.
Okay. So it's quite a lot of work. Like, you know.
It is. It's less so now. It was a really hard slog for the first 6 months when we were rehearsing and teching, and then especially in previews when we continue to rehearse and do shows at night. Starting to lighten off now.
So what's that like as an actor? Because like I just as in for your life, I mean, like, because, you know, obviously, you know, a lot of the time acting is, you know, it contract work? I mean, it varies, I imagine. Like, you know, if you're doing a film, it's just like, you know, a bunch of days in a row. If you're doing a TV series, it might be shot in a completely different way. What's it like just having essentially a day job, right? Like, you know.
Absolutely. It's one of the reasons why I took the job for, like, with a year's contract is was the idea of having that routine, being able to plan. My wife just had a baby 2 weeks ago, our second. So I've got a 2-year-old and a 2-week-year-old. And it's still hard because the hours are strange, but at least we can plan around that now. And it's also the job security. You know, it's you know, we're famous in Australia, but we're not necessarily that well off as actors. We don't get paid as well as the rest of the world. And anyway, just to have that security of I know I've got work for a year. A regular paycheck. I've got annual leave. I've never had holidays before. I've generally been on holidays my whole life and then worked here and there. Yeah. Or unemployed my whole life and worked here and there.
But it doesn't really feel like a holiday when you're unemployed and you're wondering where your next job will be.
No, exactly. Yeah.
Whereas when you've got a job and they go, oh, this is your holiday now, you can actually go on a holiday.
Yeah, yeah. So it's been great to have that routine,
Okay, so tell me, I always ask on this podcast and if somebody has a philosophy. And it can be about anything, work, life, love. It can be about a range of things, and it's a completely valid thing to say that you don't have one also. Mm. But I know this has been sprung on you a little, but do you have one?
That's okay. Yeah, you did mention it just before we started, and I was like, oh, philosophy, that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, some of the clue is in the title, but yes.
And what is a philosophy in itself? I don't know. Well, I would like to mention this because I think I've changed a lot. I've grown, I've evolved, as you should, I think, and as that's what life's about. So, but what I found fun in my 20s when I was footloose and fancy free, you know, I lived in Bondi for 12 years. I lived at the beach and I am still a big water baby. And I was really into vibrations, man. And
it's compulsory.
But I still.
By the way, if you say vibrations, that you have to pause and then say man.
Well, no, with a hipster accent, man. So, man.
Man.
Well, it's kind of English, man. Yeah.
Man.
Yeah. Vibrations, man. Not man or man. Man. Yeah, that's it. You've got it. Or like naan bread, like man. Like naan, that's it. With a double A.
Man.
Yeah. Vibrations, man.
And then we'll get some naan.
All right. Let me try and make this quick.
Okay.
So nothing's actually solid, right? Everything's made up of atoms, particles, and they're all bouncing off each other. So like this desk is not actually solid. It's just tiny little things. And they're literally just bouncing off each other. Same with you, your body, your whole blood and skin and bone. It's still little particles that are bouncing off each other. So they're all vibrations. And I haven't done this for about 15 years, like, as in spoken about it. What was my other thing? Right. And then also that was kind of early on in my 20s was when digital was really coming in, like linear was moving away and then there was ones and zeros. You've either got on and off, like you can create a whole colorful picture, like a JPEG, just from a combination of ones and zeros. And that's that whole coding can tell you what colors goes here into this pixel, et cetera. And so that really simplified things. It's just either on or off. It's a vibration. It's positive or negative. It's a one or a zero.
I like what you're saying. Mm. So tell me how that then you, what that meant about how you were living your life.
So it's all vibrations, man.
Yeah.
And so just being a big zeros, water baby, man. being a big water baby, a wave in the ocean can be formed simply by a butterfly flapping its wings. You know, the tiniest little ripple way out in the ocean will then move. So, and a wave in the ocean isn't, it's a piece of energy moving through the water. So the water just goes up and down. The water doesn't actually move along the ocean. As the energy flows through it, it just goes up and down. And until it hits the shore and might topple over itself, like, you know, in The Barrel Man. Anyway, so that being said, it's a tiny piece of energy that travels from way out to the shore. And so this is basically it. If you're surfing, if you're riding a wave, man, then you're like riding a vibration. So therefore you're like at one with like the whole existence of, you know, creation. So that's the closest you can be to being at one with creation is when you're surfing.
Okay, so you know what? I know that you're laughing both at yourself and that idea, but I love it.
Yeah, like, it's, I love it's beautiful. It. Yeah.
Like, I'm a person,
I don't want to let go of that either.
No, and I'm a person who has always loved, you know, being by the water. Mm. And part of it is that I've never felt more connected with, you know, the world and the planet than when I'm in the water.
Mm.
You know, the amount of times that you, if you're just out in the ocean and just, you know, feeling the waves being lifted up and down by the waves, you know, how connected I feel with the idea that, you know, of what we are and living on the planet. So this is an idea that, you know, actually genuinely appeals to me. So now that you're not living, you know, in Bondi,
by the beach in your 20s. Without two kids and a family. And look, I just guess I'd say, well, I kind of said it earlier, you've got to laugh in its simplicity. I used to have that written on my wall as a teenager, just in Comic Sans, in, you know, landscape printed. Just you've got to laugh.
In the most comical of all sense.
I also had What We Dream We Become. So, you know, set the B, like you're at A, set the B. Your imagination's your limit. You know, a lot of inventions today are from science fiction writings from the 50s. People imagine things. And then people like, what? That's crazy. You know, sliding doors or what? You know, video phones or lasers. And then because it's been presented, the idea has been painted for people, they go, hang on, let's figure out how to make that work. Once you've got the end point, you just got to figure out how to get there. So your imagination is your limit. So, you know, what we dream, we become. Set the B, just get there. But, yeah, ultimately, I just don't think you can wallow too much. You've got to be positive. You've got to keep a positive outlook on life. Good mate Damon Gammo has got 2040 coming out, this great, you know, documentary about climate change. And the best thing about it is the angle that he's taking, which is looking at the positives. We can all get so weighed down at the moment with the horrific possibilities that are coming towards us that it just all seems too overwhelming and too hard to deal with. But he's created this documentary about the solutions, and it can inspire people to, you know, to believe that there's possibility for change.
That's a really encouraging thing to hear, to be honest, because I've got to be honest, I'm probably somebody who I wanted to write some stuff about climate change from a stand-up show, and the way that I do that generally is to do some research. And oh man, that was not a good idea, because I think that I was genuinely, it set me off into I was having some other issues in my real life anyway that were teetering me on the edge of, you know, what I have probably looked back on now and realized that I fell into a, you know, probably a hole that you would describe as like genuine depression, not clinical depression, but, you know, depression, you know, caused by life and circumstance, and then me spending so much time reading about climate change and the realities of what we're facing and what we're not doing about it on a whole range of, yeah, worldwide levels, that I was genuinely depressed about the future of humanity. And now I'm trying to find some hope, you know, out of that. I always think when it comes to children, you mentioned you've just, you know, had your second child. It must be something that you at least think about a little when you have a child, of like what sort of world am I bringing this child into?
It does. It makes it so much more real when you realize that you have so much more responsibility now. And it is overwhelming and daunting when you think, what can I do on my own? But it's a very simple idea if we all do that. You know, I've got my, you know, my keep cup and my Camelback bloody water bottle now, and whereas I used to just use a plastic drink bottle all the time, like a disposable plastic drink bottle all the time. Simple things like that, I think if we all do it, really make a difference. And it's just, you've just got to do your bit.
What sort of things do you think about when you have kids? Like, as in, like, you know, what sort of things suddenly that you didn't think about before do you start to think about and that are present in your mind?
Oh, really mundane stuff, like, when's the next feed due? And and what's he going to have for dinner tonight? And, oh my God, do I have to change his nappy again?
Yeah, so not big picture stuff, very small picture stuff.
No, absolutely. I mean, I've got a son.
This kid's only vibrations and he's shitting a lot. For a whole bunch of vibrations, there's a lot of shit coming out.
Does that smell? Does that stink have a vibration? Of course, so he was just born. I have a daughter now and it just hit me instantly. I was like, I might walk her down the aisle. She might play footy. She might hike Mount Everest and, she might be the first female prime minister. Who knows? She might give birth to a grandchild.
It's a bit depressing that if it's going to take that long, to be honest, though. If she's the first female prime minister, isn't it? That's going to be...
Oh, yeah, she might be a prime minister, you know.
Let's hope
she might be the 15th prime minister, female prime minister. of course. Hey, we've already had cover for a female prime minister. But anyway, it's... president of the world.
Yeah. The first female president of the world. That's good. There you go.
You do have those ideas, but I don't think, for me, it hasn't been that, you know, life-changing or overwhelming in terms of...
Were you a person who always thought of yourself as being a parent? Were you someone who you were always like, this is going to be part of it?
Yeah, definitely something I've always wanted to do and thought I would be good at or capable at.
Did you ever think about what sort of parent you wanted to be, or you were just the sort of person who's like, oh, well, I'll be a parent, and then the sort of parent I'm going to be is who I am when I'm being a parent?
A lot of my life's been just like jump in. It's been the same way. I think it's important that you sort yourself out. And we're all doing that. And it's fascinating, isn't it? I think we're one of the first major generations to really look at, you know, self-analysis and self-growth and self-improvement. And I think it's so important because once you start doing that, you see the patterns. You see your parents and you see their parents and you're like, oh, who has a chance? You know, I saw a meme the other day of like this, you know, dad and his toddler, and dad's like, be careful where you walk. And the kid's like, you be careful, I'm following in your footsteps. And it's like, wow, it's, you know, memes, wow. But yeah, I mean, I think it is important if you're going to be a parent to have a good look at yourself. And
how do you look at yourself? Because this podcast is often about that very thing, which is the idea of self-examination.
And my wife's been really good at that. She's been fantastic at being my kind of, you know, at-home psych, my mental health, you know, go-to person. Obviously your friends are really fantastic. They're your first go-to, and then you might need, I think everybody should get some psychological help or just interaction. Helps maybe the wrong word because it puts a stigma on it. It's let's just call it improvement or assessment or just like tinkering with your car or your website.
Sometimes it's just good to go and see a professional. If nothing else, sometimes not just to put the burden on your friends and family.
I don't know if I'm right in this, but I found being an actor has been very helpful.
Okay.
Because
why? Tell me
why. Well, I assume, this is my theory, is just because it's been my pursuit to pursue the human facets of life, like human emotion and the way, like my job is to become someone and understand why someone would become a drug dealing murderer or why someone would become a pedophile or why someone would be a gay dad or why someone would be a wizard that's trying to raise their children in a wizarding, you're putting yourself in different people's, oh, excuse me, just got a cramp.
Is that our first live on the podcast cramp?
Yes. You heard it here first.
I think technically I might have had one before, but I covered it up because, you know, I don't want to embarrass
my
guests.
My hammy too. I didn't want to pull a hammy like on a podcast.
why can't Guyton do the show this week? Well, he was doing a podcast, didn't his hammy? Anyway, he's a real manly man. Yeah, everything's fine. Yeah. Okay, so you mentioned something really fascinating to me there because I understand that. The idea of...
Empathy.
empathy to the character so that you can understand the character, so you can convey to the audience that this character isn't two-dimensional, that they're three-dimensional, that even if their actions are terrible, here are the reasons or the motivations or what they believe they're doing, that even though this thing they're doing is repugnant to us, the audience watching on, they, the character, the person, understand the motivations and absolutely the reason that they are doing that thing, right? So that idea of examining something on that level is, I agree, would give you that empathy into other people. But particularly someone like you who has played some people who people would not be immediately empathetic to. So when you do play someone like a Carl Williams, you know, who, you know, is a character that has so much dark side, so much darkness, you know, at least, you know, in the actions around the way that he, you know, lived his life. How do you go about, you know, understanding a character like that?
Well, the first thing I kind of realize is that no one thinks they're a bad person unless they're a psychopath.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, no one wakes up and goes, I'm going to do this today. Maybe if it's revenge, but you know,
it is the worst, by the way, when you realize you're the bad guy in a situation, like, and you go, hang on, what? I'm the bad guy?
Yeah.
Oh no.
I guess I did come across that way.
Yeah.
I didn't mean to be that.
No.
Way. Yeah. Yeah. I didn't mean to hurt you. Yes, but you did.
Yeah.
I mean, you just said it, like, it's, they have their own reasons and you need to find out why. Well, you need to figure out why they can't tell you.
When you're tackling someone like that, so someone who's, a prominent, like, you know, a person who is a famous bad person. Is that the wrong way to say it? But, you know, I guess that's as good a way as any.
Notorious.
A notorious person. That's a great way to put it. What's your actual process to do that? How do you get inside a head like that? How do you make decisions as an actor about how you understand?
Well, when he was a real
like
person,
that,
like we're talking about Carl Williams, you just do a lot of research. I'd spoke to a lot of people that knew him, as many as I could. You know, mostly the detectives that couldn't really get to many of the real gangland guys. Although I have met a few over the time in bars and things. You read all the literature you can, but ultimately, at the end of the day, I was playing a character in a drama, in a scripted drama. So it's always within the script. It's within the character relationships and the history of the character. And the choices that are made in those scenes are influenced by that story and that background. So, the best way to make those decisions is to put yourself in there, to practice it out and get a feeling for it.
So you play an iconic character like that. You mentioned the idea that, and I can imagine this, that occasionally then a gangster's going to come up to you in a bar or whatever, you know, someone from that world, colourful characters.
Yeah,
a lot of colourful racing identities.
A lot of different colourful tracksuits and bum bags.
Because you've played someone who's iconic in their world, so they feel like they have an immediate connection with
absolutely
you, I imagine.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yes, that's. I don't know how to elaborate on that. It's true. They come up and they slap me on the back and they say, oh, I used to roll with Carl. And I was like, good on you. I'm from Brisbane.
Yeah. I'm actually an actor. So then there's that sort of fandom. And then you move into a world like Harry Potter, which has some of the most hardcore fans of all
amazing
time.
Amazing fans.
What has that been like, you know, being exposed to the fandom of Harry Potter?
It's epic, isn't it? It's just crazy. They're there in their robes and their different houses, because you can be sorted. Mm. You go to the Pottermore website and you can be sorted into one of the four, Gryffindor, Slytherin, Ravenclaw or Hufflepuff. But their appreciation is the best part. Like, we haven't let them down. And there's some serious fans out there who've let us know how nervous they were to come see something that wasn't the book, or a movie based on the book, something new. And they've just all been thrilled because the story's finished now. Harry Potter is done. There's absolutely no way it's going to be continued anymore. And that's what they're JK's words. And so it's, everyone's just kind of so happy that it's kind of been finished this way as well. And it's, yeah, Look, I don't know. Is the question more about how crazy these fans are? Or?
No, because yeah. I don't like to make...
Because they're not crazy. They're just passionate.
Yes, and that's, I guess, the thing is, like, the thing that I was very made aware of being in the room with it was that I was trying to think in my mind, and this was going to be my next question to you, is there anything that I love that much? You know, as in, is there anything that I am a fan of to the level that these people are a fan of Harry Potter?
You're a little bit
and
jealous of that, aren't you?
I was. I was genuinely envious of it. I mean, at the end, I bought a beanie because I was like, you know what? I want to be a bit of a Harry Potter fan.
You do. Well, yeah, it's like if you go to an NBA game, you're like, oh, I just need to be part of this.
Right, yeah, I'm going to buy a singlet. Yeah. Even if I don't, you know, wear it around a lot, I'm gonna get something because I want to be part of this.
Yeah,
whereas
Clippers,
there were people, oh, God, dude, that's a bit too close to home for me, to be honest, mate.
But, been and gone, mate, been and gone.
So what I want to say is that is there anything in your life that you've ever been, you know, kind of, a fan of in that same way.
No, and I have had those thoughts. But quickly, just one more thing about that before is like my favourite thing are the overheards. Just what you get the third person kind of replay back from like people, friends that were sitting next to other people and what they've been whispering to each other during the show or in interval or something. And just the way people's imaginations will just run with it. What's going to happen next? Oh, I reckon this is going to happen. Or like during the show, some ingredients from the potion store will be recited and people will be like, that's Polyjuice. You know, because they know what the combination to make Polyjuice spell is, potion is.
The show is very open to people who aren't, Harry Potter.
If you don't know the ingredients for Polyjuice, it's okay.
It's fine, but there's enough of those hidden things.
You don't even need to know what Polyjuice is.
No, but every now and again, I would... Everyone would be kind of recognizing something and I would be a little jealous.
Yes.
I'd be like, oh, now I wish I knew what that was.
And I can't think of anything that I've been that crazy about. I mean, I'm mad keen about the water. I love fishing and I love surfing. I love snorkeling. I really do miss my time by the beach in Bondi and in Queensland where we'd go to Stratty and Moreton Bay and Moreton Island and Fraser Island, et cetera, but, and I don't get to the water as much here in Melbourne, but. So if there was anything I was fanatical about, it'd be the water, the ocean. But no, not to that extent, not to the way these fans are crazy about Harry.
We'll start to wind up. It takes me a little while to wind up because I've got a few questions I'd like to ask before we finish up. Now, the first one might feel a bit full on, but it's just all I'm really asking is what do you reckon life's about? I know it's a big question, but it starts by me asking this, which is... do you think about death? Are you a person who, you know, thinks about death? Is death a thing that is present in your thoughts, in your mind, in the way that you live your life?
Not a huge way, but I guess as I get older and older, you're more aware of it. As you see, you know, your parents aging and you farewell your grandparents and et cetera, you look at like really normal things like housing and like care, special care and things like that. You're like, oh, hang on, I'm going to be there one day. What's going to happen to me? I wouldn't say I'm overly religious. I was brought up a Christian. I was brought up a kind of Anglican Christian and I'm definitely not prescribed to any religion anymore. I do still think there's some greater power. I would go that far. I think there's something. I just... in my waters, I just can't say no to that idea. I don't know what it is. I don't know if there's an afterlife or you continue on. I think maybe you leave back on the vibrations thing, man, is that you can leave like your energy around and in things, in your surroundings. And I'm not necessarily scared of death, but I don't think there's, I don't believe there's like literally chapter two, like, you know, where I'm Guyton again. So I'm very aware of like making the most of this life and enjoying it and you know,
so,
exploring it.
What do you find most meaningful about your life then? When you are living life, if you feel like it's, you know, not to go to a heaven or a hell, not to, you know, it's about the vibrations, man. What then gives your life the most meaning when you're in those moments where you're going, yes, this is me living my life. This is what life is for me. What are those moments?
Well, it has to be relationships. I really feel that. And it, it was definitely experiences, and that's part of it, you know. I was a wanderluster before the hashtag existed, and gosh, it's so great exploring the world, and I plan to do more of it. There's so much wonder out there, and it's great, but it's sharing things that's the most. As an actor, I've discovered it's a lonely kind of celebration. I've won some awards, and it's like, yay, I won an award, and there's no one to share it with, and people, your peers and friends are like, slap on your back, well done, mate, but they're not there with you. So it's just like you kind of get home, you're like, oh, okay. But then you do a play or a production that you win as a group. This is just an example. And it's like you've got a team thing that you can share. And I think your relationships are the most important thing when you can go wandering and share that with somebody, or, you know, have a family and create children and share that creation. And just old friends, reconnecting with old friends has happened a few times lately. And it's like the memories, creating memories, you know, is a really great thing. To have a memory that you can then share with someone in the future is really special.
If you had a time machine and you were able to go back to a moment in your life and have it over again, is there a moment in your life where you would take that option, or are you a person who subscribes to the idea that everything's happened, you know, brought you to where you are?
Oh, it's just too big a question. Like, what's your favorite movie?
This is how we get to the big questions at the end. It's
like, I might answer it, but I'd really want to mull over it for a month. But like, that's the moment. Okay. Not that one, this one.
You can ring in. But,
maybe. Maybe if it was just about, you know, fly on the wall watching something again.
Yeah. Oh.
For sure, I definitely want to do that.
What would you want to watch?
I don't know. I can't tell you straight away, Will, because I just couldn't think about it. Like, there's like, oh, me winning the swimming carnival when I was 10, or you know, the birth of my son and my child, or like meeting Alex, or like, I don't know, walking on set for Underbelly, or I don't know. Diving off a waterfall in Northern Territory, or I don't know.
Like, okay, I'll ask you a different question. Is there a time in your life that you would like a do-over on? Something that went wrong, or something that you regret?
No, I'm one of those like, yeah, look, no, yeah. I can't single one out. Mm. If I were to, I couldn't single one out. So, and I do think it's just all meant to be.
Is there a misconception about you that you think that people have?
That I'm, oh, what is it? How do I put it? That I can be rude sometimes, but I'm quite potentially on the spectrum, I think. And so I have had a lot of trouble with like sarcasm and, you know, just gauging where things are at. And so I take things a lot quite seriously sometimes, but at now in my older age, like I've learned that you just kind of, you've learned the social constructs of life. And so you figure out how it all works. So I'm a lot better at that now, but yeah, sometimes I can be a bit confusing to people because I don't get that they're joking. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. If people were to think of one thing or say one thing about you, when they think of you, ideally, like this is not what do they say. This is what would you like for other people to say when they think of you, or to think of when they think of you?
Oh, Guyton, he's all right, isn't he?
I like that. That's a really good answer. And that feels like a great place
just all right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Guyton,
yeah.
Well, you know what? You have been all right, mate.
You know what? You're all right.
You're all right,
Will,
mate.
You're all right.
And you're all right too, mate. Thank you so much for doing this. Harry Potter and the Cursed Child, if you can get a ticket, they've just released another 50,000 of them. So please.
Up to March next year.
Go and see it. I honestly, you know, I don't recommend things that I don't like, and I have been raving about this to people. It really blew my mind. I just thought it was such a wonderful production. Everybody in it is so fantastic, and just the actual scope and scale of it is magnificent. And I imagine that there's going to be a really cool time in your life at some stage when your kids start reading Harry Potter books, and you're going to be able to tell them that you you played Ron Weasley.
That's exciting.
In fact,
actually,
you're going to be able to spoil how it all turns out for them.
Well, Rocco, my two-year-old's already into it. He's already doing Expecto Patronus and things like that. So, yeah.
Mate, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for doing this.
See you, mate.